And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. So glad that you're tuning in today. So today what we're going to do is going to do what we do every single week. We're going to dive into life issues. But today is a little bit different because of what happened over the weekend. So it's kind of a continuation. I only get an hour here on every Tuesday. So it's kind of a continuation from last week on what we're going to do. So, of course, the entire world knows what happened. The entire world knows what happened on Sunday, early Sunday morning, unless you're living under some rock. So what happened was I woke up Sunday morning. I was actually in Middle Tennessee visiting with my brother and some family members. And I woke up on Sunday morning and did what I normally do. I pull out my phone and I get on Twitter to see what's going on. And I was it was clear that something terrible happened in Orlando. So we had a terrible tragedy in Orlando, and where 49 people, the number you've been hearing is 50 people are dead. Well, one of those is the terrorist. Well, 49 people in that club were shot and killed. 50 plus people have been injured in a nightclub there in Orlando. And last week I discussed the value of life. Last week we talked about how important it is that in the narrative of the day, as we're talking through these issues, the value of life drives a lot of this. So last week we discussed the rape case that's going on out west, and the dad that wrote the terrible letter in defense of his son of raping a girl behind a dumpster. And we talked about the value of life. And what I said was, if you devalue life at the beginning stage via abortion, and then you devalue life at the end of stage with doctor-assisted suicide, then ultimately you devalue life in general at every stage. And so what we found is, and what I said is, we can't be surprised when these things happen. We can't be surprised. Now, we need to be hurt, and we need to be upset, and we need to be angry, and we need to mourn, but we cannot be surprised when we see life continue to be devalued. We can't be surprised when a coward walks into a club full of innocent people and he starts shooting. And that is what happened in Orlando. So we have to get to a point where we're starting to value life. And what we know is ISIS and terrorists do not value life. And they certainly don't value homosexuals' life. We are at very difficult and scary times in history. Nightclubs, schools, churches. There was a hostage situation in a Walmart in Amarillo, Texas this morning. So it is happening at a number of different places, and it's scary that it's happening as often as it is. We are seeing attacks everywhere. People do this out of religion. They do this out of anger. Some people say, well, it's workplace violence, but ultimately they do this out of hate, and hate is driving much of the rhetoric. So when hate is in the driver's seat, we better watch out. We better prepare ourselves for what we are going to see down the road. This is ultimately what jihad is. Now, they say that jihad is a holy war, but ultimately, it is hate driving the motives. It is hate for your neighbor. It isn't love for a neighbor. See, the gospel in Christianity says that I will lay my life down for my neighbor. Christ laid his life down for us. This terrorist says, because you disagree with me, I'm going to take your life. We must recognize that. We stand for what is right. We preach the gospel, but we don't wish death on someone that is different. We are in desperate need for dialogue, logical and real and rational dialogue. This has to happen, but first, we must mourn. If you are on social media, if you're on Twitter, if you're on Facebook, what you have seen in the last 2 days is you've seen everyone on the left and on the right push an agenda. You've seen conservatives say, well, it's not the gun's fault. You've seen liberals say This was started by the Christian right, and this is the right's fault for celebrating guns and getting guns in the hands of so many people. What we're missing is the mourning part. There are moms and dads burying their children today. So you know what? Our political stance, our political leaning can wait a few days, a week, maybe a month. Can it not? We must weep with those who weep. Romans 12:15 says it clearly. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Are we doing that? Or maybe the better question is, can we do that? And that brings me to an article that I found, or that Dr. Moore wrote on Sunday. Dr. Russell Moore, who's the president of the Ethics and Religious Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention. He wrote this for the ERLC, but he also wrote it in Time, published this as well. And here's what he had to say. We woke up Sunday morning to news of the worst mass shooting in American history, as a terrorist murdered and injured over 100 people in a gay nightclub in Orlando. In the aftermath, we've seen some of the best aspects of America. People lining up, for example, to give blood. We've also seen some of the worst, as the aftermath turned into an excuse for social media wars over everything from gun control to presidential politics. What I wonder is whether the country still has the capacity to grieve together in moments of national crisis. When we're accustomed to seeing news in real time on our television screens and on our phones, it is sometimes easy to forget that the news we are viewing is actually real. At least 50 people created in the image of God were slaughtered in cold blood. Families who are waiting to see their loved ones are finding out today that they will never see them again in this life. That ought to drive us to mourn. Our nation has shared moments of crisis and tragedy before. Think of Pearl Harbor, when the country rallied around President Roosevelt and toward a common purpose of defeating the Axis of Powers. Think of John F. Kennedy's assassination, when the country, even the Kennedy's family's enemies, seemed to grieve together. Think of 9/11, before the fracturing of the Iraq War, when the country looked to common cultural expressions for the service at the National Cathedral to the cold open of Saturday Night Live for a sense of lament together. It seems now, though, that there's rarely a time of grieving together. The time of lament morphs almost immediately into arguments over what the president should have said or whether this validates or annihilates someone's views on guns or immigration or whatever. Some of that, of course, is just the speed of social media. People are able to discuss, rather publicly, issues much quicker than they could before. But there seems to be more than that. Our national divisions increasingly make it difficult for us to not just work together, but even to pause and weep together. We become more concerned about protecting ourselves from one another's political pronouncements than we do with mourning with those who mourn. In some ways, then, the national crisis like this one feels less like the 1963 John Kennedy assassination than like the attempted George Wallace assassination in 1972. Reports are that some within the Nixon administration, arguably even the president himself, contemplated planning George McGovern campaign literature in the would-be assailant Arthur Bremer's apartment. The shooting in Laurel, Maryland was about, for them, the campaign itself. How, then, do we weep with those who weep? Let's call our congregations to pray together. Let's realize that, in this case, our gay and lesbian neighbors are likely quite scared. Who wouldn't be? Demonstrate the sacrificial love of Jesus to them. We don't have to agree on the meaning of marriage and sexuality to love one another and to see the murderous sin of terrorism. Let's also pray for our leaders who have challenging decisions to make in the midst of crisis. Let's mobilize our congregations and others to give blood for the victims. Let's call for governing authorities to do their primary duty of keeping its people safe from evil doers. As the body of Christ, though, we can love and serve and weep and mourn. And we can remind ourselves and our neighbors that this is not the way it is supposed to be. We mourn, but we mourn in the hope of a kingdom where blood is not shed and where bullets never fly. So my question to you is, have you mourned? Have you recognized that 49 people, humans, with dreams and goals and aspirations, I don't know all of their status, but most of them, if not all of them, American citizens, your fellow citizen, were slaughtered for what? to push an ideology. We're slaughtered out of anger, out of hate. We will figure out the reason. I think we already know the reason. But the reason doesn't change that a mom is burying her son today. So what we have to do, what we have to do is get to a point where we value life or we don't. Are we prepared to weep or attack? Are we prepared to love or hate? To talk to or to talk at? We must lead with love. So the question is, do you? Anger will be natural in these situations. But when is that where is that anger placed? Our fellow citizens were slaughtered. We should recognize this before we post our gun view or marriage view. We must love and mourn with these families. And we're going to talk about how to do that when we come back. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood. Thanks so much for listening today as we dive into what happened over the weekend. And so what we're doing is we're going to, in a way, continue from last week and still talk about the value of life and how that drives really everything that we do. It drives our conversations. It drives the way we react to people. It drives the way we talk to our spouses, the way we talk to our kids. Do we value life or not? So as we mourn for the lives lost in Orlando, I want us to look in the mirror and evaluate ourselves. Does your concern or care differ depending on who was slaughtered? So what some people will rush to do, some people will see the 49 people that were killed in Orlando, and they think that they're doing the pro-life movement a favor, and that they would say things like, well, do you know that 3,000 babies are slaughtered every single day and you say nothing? Now that may be a true statement, but is it a helpful statement? No. Because again, it doesn't change that mom is burying her child today. I saw somebody post yesterday, well, we have to remember, we don't need to make these people that were killed into martyrs, because homosexuality is still a sin. Is that a true statement? Maybe. But is it helpful? No. How many people are going to read that and go, you know what, I want to be on their team? We have to think before we speak. So do our reactions differ based on who is the one that is the victim? So in the last week's case where we saw the rape, because someone was passed out drunk and unconscious, do we see her differently as opposed to someone else that may be raped? And then this week, because it was a gay club, does that mean you have a certain amount of love for them, but not a full amount of love for them? These are questions we have to answer within ourselves, because regardless of anyone's moral or political leanings, this was a human. And now their life is gone. So the question from last week still remains, do we value life or not? And now I want to add another question. Do we jump to mourn or attack? When you first heard of what happened in Orlando, was your initial reaction heartbreak and sadness? Or, well, they better not take my guns. Or this better not push that agenda. Or, oh, this will give us an opportunity to take their guns. Because the left nor the right are innocent here in terms of the way we've handled the aftermath. And so if we're seeking dialogue and good conversation that's going to get us at a good place, then we have to be willing to see that in ourselves, that we need to mourn. We need to have sadness. I remember when 9/11, when I heard about 9/11, I was 17 years old. And when I heard about it, I had a deep sadness the entire day. And most of America did. Were we angry? Yes. But that anger was pointed not at the fellow citizens, not at fellow Americans, not at Democrats or Republicans. That anger was pointed toward terrorism. And man, have we gone a long way from that. So I know we must act to stop these attacks. And our leaders need to get involved and do something about it. But we as citizens must first stop and weep with those who weep. So my blog post today said this: the senseless attack on innocent people this past weekend has captured the minds, hearts, and discussions of the American people. This isn't the first time we have seen an attack on our soil, and sadly, this will probably not be the last. A coward has once again decided to force parents, siblings, and friends to bury loved ones. This terrible truth is driving many to political posturing. Social media has become the home of vitriolic and hateful rhetoric where everyone seems to have a take on best practices going forward. Many are asking questions about guns, religion, and sexuality. Alliances are being formed and hate is being dispersed. We cannot take the time to mourn the loss of fellow citizens because we are too busy crafting our next post and our latest idea. Now, it's not lost on me that I say this. As I say this, I'm writing a blog post about the current events facing our nation. It is also not lost on me that I'm very active on social media. My musings today are not an assessment on the use of online vehicles. Instead, my desire today is to bring some clarity to the situation we find ourselves in, a situation that is spiraling out of control, a situation that lacks hope. While we are debating guns and religion, parents are walking into their child's room without their child. While we are seeking the upper hand with our friends on social media, parents are reading old text and listening to old voicemails just so they can hear their child's voice one more time. While we are debating the current election and a particular candidate's position, parents are scheduling meetings with funeral homes to bury their child. These are very difficult truths, but ones we should not neglect. I love political discourse. I love discussing the news of the day and having a good debate. I appreciate dialoguing with people that disagree with me. But we must not do this in the place of mourning with our fellow citizens. We must not lose sight of lives lost. There are certainly some discussions that need to be had. You can look back at past blogs from me to read my views on that. But can we not all agree to stand with these families today? Can we not all agree that these lives deserve our respect and care? I entitled today's post as Hope. I'm truly grateful that our founders chose this name back in 1997. They understood our desperate need for hope in times of crisis. This isn't just a truth for our patients, but it is a daily truth we need as well. Everyone wants to have hope. Everyone is seeking some type of reassurance that all is well. I'm afraid, though, that this sense of assurance is starting to fail. It's failing because we refuse to take the time necessary to share the good news of a better tomorrow in light of a terrible today. As these attacks become commonplace in society, we tend to find ourselves jaded and disinterested in the actual lives being lost. We struggle to connect with the realities around us and instead get lost in the non-reality that is social media. There will be a time and place for policy discussion. We will, I'm sure, look at a number of different views as we seek to prevent these horrible attacks in the future. Today, though, let's focus on the victims in Orlando and their families. Families that may struggle to find hope in tomorrow. Pray for them, love them, and welcome them as they grieve. America will bounce back from this, but that truth doesn't change the reality for the parents today that are making funeral arrangements. They need hope, and we need to help them find it as we strive for a brighter tomorrow for ourselves and for our country. So have you thought about these parents? Have you thought about them at all? So regardless of where you stand on the issue, think about the emotional struggle that this parent is going through. And so if we're not there to stand, if we're not there to love them, where are they going to go? These are deep issues that we need to take care of in our own lives. Do you give any thought to that? You know, it's hard for me to get away from the TV when or the news cycle, not necessarily the TV. We don't have cable or anything like that at the house, but I'm constantly, I'm either on the CNN app or I'm going to Twitter or I'm going to different websites to keep up with what's going on. And so it's hard for me to detach from that. I think sometimes we do need to detach from that. But because of our connectivity to everything right now, it is hard for us to see that these were real lives taken. It's hard for us to even grasp what these families are going through. And what we need to understand is, you know, there was a time where folks said that, well, ISIS will never reach our soil. Well, that's false. And so it would be ignorant to say these things won't happen. My question is, what are we going to do to stop them first? But that's a conversation for another day. And the next question is, when things like this happen, what are we going to do for these families and the victims? Are we willing to stand and love people even though they may vote differently? Even though they lean a different direction, are we willing to do that? When we come back, I want to dive into an article that I think is very relevant to what we're dealing with. And it paints a great picture of how most of the country sees this. Not people that are news and political junkies, but most of the country. This is how they see this, and it's going to frame a dialogue that we need to have going forward. We'll be back. To everyone who's lost someone they love, long before it was their time, you feel like the days you had were not enough when you said goodbye. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, and we're so thankful that we have this platform, so thankful that you are listening today. Before I go on with what I was going on with this segment, we're running this live on Facebook. So if you're watching this, you know, people are asking questions in the comment section. And one of the questions said, do you think as Christians, if we do not mourn or that we chose to hate in this time, are we letting the devil continue to advance in this battle? Are we spreading God's love or are we spreading the devil's hate? And my answer to that is, we as Christians just need to understand that our neighbor is our neighbor. Does that make sense? So whether your neighbor is a Democrat or a Republican, gay or straight, trans or not, you can have differing views with them. And we don't water down the gospel. We don't water down the scripture. We don't water down the truth. But what we better do is love them as people and as human beings. And so you see that in things that I was going to get into a little bit later, but you see that when thousands of people line up to give blood. That's Democrats, Republicans, Independents, gay, straight, and all the other standing together saying we need to do something. When Chick-fil-A on a Sunday opens up its doors and hands out food to that line. You know, and Chick-fil-A's been in the news a lot about their stance on marriage. But Chick-fil-A in Orlando says we're going to open up our doors on a Sunday, nonetheless, to hand out food and drinks to this whoever needs it. That is what we need to be doing as a people and as believers. So if love is driving you, that doesn't mean you water down the gospel. Love drove Jesus. But he had difficult conversations with people. And he went to those places because he went out of love. That didn't mean he watered down what he was saying. Excuse me. He came from a place of love. So if that is your foundation, then you will handle that the proper way. So today what we've been doing is adding our voice to the discussion of Orlando. The first two segments we focused on weeping and mourning with those who weep and mourn. We need to do this regardless of our political and moral leanings and differences. We must lead again with love. And as we do this, I think we need to ask some questions. So that, you know, earlier I said I was going to get into another article. This article is written by Steve Dace. And Steve Dace is a radio host, and he also writes for Conservative Review, conservativereview.com, and in a number of other places as well. You'll find his stuff. But what I like about Steve is he is not only his political leanings, but he also sees everything in a biblical worldview. So when he has discussions and conversations, he does that from a place of love. And so the article that he wrote on Sunday, dealing with what happened in Orlando. So here's his take. It's almost as if we're becoming numb to attacks like this. Like we should have a permanent hot take saved in each of our social media accounts that we can just immediately repost after each one. Sort of like a thoughts and prayers status update. Man's inhumanity to man fires off a round or several, and America's clockwork orange is wound up and raring to go with talking points at the ready. And I confess, I'm just as guilty of this as anyone. Yet there was something different about this Orlando nightclub shooting for me. It weighed on me. My heart was heavy. I decided to take most of Sunday away from media and think and pray on it longer than I typically would a story that dominates the news cycle like this. So for me this time, the typical script just didn't feel right. As a conservative, I know what I'm supposed to do at times like these. I'm supposed to decry a president who refuses to acknowledge the true nature of Islamic radicalism. I know I'm supposed to push back against the gun grabbers and those who let political correctness blind them to the threat. I know I'm supposed to say that, yes, we Christians also believe homosexuality is a sin as Muslims do. But while homosexuals are frequently killed for their behavior in the Muslim world, Christ actually gave up his life to pay the penalty for mine and yours. It's not that I don't think these things are right and true, because I do. It's just that it seems to me that they are insufficient, trite, if you will. Like we're all just playing to type, but we're not the ones writing the script. We need something more than this. We need to talk to each other, not at each other. So we begin to contemplate this non-debate from a broader perspective. And here's the question that popped in his mind. What does the average American think about these tragedies? The average American isn't like those of us who write, read content such as this. So hear that. The average American isn't like me, someone that reads news all the time. That doesn't mean that I'm better than anyone else. It just means my interests are a little weird. I'm into politics and the news of the day, not really into sports or anything like that anymore. And so the average American is not ingesting all of that on a daily basis, an hour-to-hour basis. The average American doesn't go to church once a week. Donald Trump may have received more votes than anyone ever has in a Republican presidential primary, but his 13.3 million votes are only 4% of the total population. Think about that. Alexa ranks Slate as the most popular political website by traffic in the country. They receive 23 million viewers each night, and that still makes them 196th most popular website in America overall. It seems as if there's a great big world out there that doesn't care what we think. So just how does this great big world react to America's tragedy culture when it's forced to gaze into our corner of the snow globe? Largely unchurched and largely unattached to either side's focus, I'd imagine it probably asks the following two questions. How in the world is our government able to trace the last lineage of mad cow disease, but unable to stop crazy people from getting guns? Why do we allow people into the country or let people stay who make it obvious they hate us and mean to do us harm? So here's Steve's big idea. Instead of having an argument, I suggest we actually start one. It's time to have a national conversation about what is happening in our culture. And nothing should be off limits for fear of offending either side's cherished constituencies. If progressives are confident their secularization and political correctness isn't watering down our nation's values and leaving us more vulnerable to evil, then they shouldn't be threatened by viewpoints to the contrary. And then similar, if conservatives are confident that what the left likes to describe as America's gun culture isn't the issue, and the Second Amendment is still rightly defined to include the 21st century marksman arsenal, then neither should we. So let's have a conversation. He is, that's what I've been saying since I've had an opportunity to speak on behalf of Hope. Let's have a conversation on all of this. Because again, it all goes back to life. We can have the gun debate, the religion debate, the sexuality debate. We can have all that. But if you don't have that life debate, then none of the other stuff matters. Because there isn't a gray area. Either life has value or it has no value. So either the life of every human has value or it doesn't. So now in your mind, you may say, well, conservatives have value. Traditional marriages have value. Or you may say liberals have value. Homosexuals have value. But not people that see things differently than I do. So we must have that conversation. Discussions and conversations are good if they are drenched in love, logic, and rational thought, then we can move forward. We are so quick to jump that we fail to have all the facts and we fail to recognize real lives are being affected. So what we have to do is, what are the facts? You know, and that's the sad part. If you've been watching the news the last couple of days, we've seen just a complete disdain for facts. So you've seen some people on the right saying things that really, as someone on the right myself, they should not be saying. But you also seen some people that are just making up things about the AR-15 and how it's a they're calling it fully automatic, which is not true, and they're just making up things as they go. Because they're trying to push an agenda and they're trying to push a narrative. And when you have an uninformed populace, it's easy to push that narrative. What I'm calling for is, let's sit down and have a conversation. Not with anger. Now will my voice raise? Probably. Will your voice raise? Probably. But that's okay. One of my closest friends when I was in college was a devout Marxist. He hated the fact that I drove a big, loud truck. He hated the fact that I believed in capitalism. He hated the fact that I believed in the American dream. He hated all that. But we had lunch together. We didn't fight each other. We disagreed on everything. But we could have logical, rational conversations because that's what adults do. And if we could do that at 19 years old, 20 years old, then why can't we do that as actual grown men and women? Because what we can't assume is that all are news junkies. We can't assume that all know the issues. We must seek to bridge the gap. And what we also, even if you're listening to this, you're saying, well, I mean, I read the news all the time. I know everything about everything. Well, no, you probably don't. You probably don't know what that family's going through in Orlando right now. Wouldn't you like to know a little bit more? That doesn't mean you got to change your stance, but wouldn't you like to have that conversation? Do you desire any common ground? Do you desire these conversations? And I think a lot of times when we hear the word or the phrase common ground, we think, well, that means you want me to compromise. And I'm not going to compromise. I'm not calling for you to compromise. But at least find some common ground somewhere. So if you have a progressive friend or if you have a conservative friend and y'all have differing views, can you not try to find that one thing you agree on? Are those two things you agree on policy issues? So are you desiring wins or do you desire to crush those that differ from you? Do you desire and lead with love or hate? Because to be completely honest, folks, the answer to that question matters greatly. I ask myself that question a lot because it's easy for me to go the hate route. It's easy for me to want to just push my agenda and argue over someone without hearing their view. Again, that doesn't mean you water down yours. It just means sometimes we have to listen. There is still plenty of good in this world. So take some time to have those conversations with people. It'll make America better. It'll make your relationships better. And what it will do is it'll push the value of life up. We'll talk more when we come back. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thanks so much for listening. And isn't that a true statement? He knows. And that should make you, should give you a lot of comfort. Before I go further, I want to make sure I announce that on Friday, I will be filling in for Bob Bell. So I asked him yesterday, I said, what time should I be there? And he said, 5:45 a.m. And I almost vomited. But I will be here Friday morning, dark and early. To be with you for his show, and certainly thankful for that opportunity. Also, if you enjoy my take on news and you want to hear more, starting July 4th, I will be on 92.3, the sister station of Joy 620, and I will be diving into I will be on every single day in the evening. So be listening for that, and you'll hear more about that in the near future. But all we're going to do for 30 minutes is talking about news and looking at and making observations and things that are trending in the news. So that should be fun as well. Today's show, what we've done is we have tackled again the issue of the value of life. And so I feel like a broken record, and I apologize for that. But we have to at some point, we have to truly see, do we value life or not? I mean, are we prepared to stand for every life? We can change the narrative if we are willing to do that. So the question is, are we? Are we willing? Can we sit down with people that disagree with us? Do you love or have contempt for them? Now, I know this isn't easy. It's a lot easier to be around like-minded people. It's a lot easier to just kind of sit around with people that agree with you on every issue, and there's never that awkward moment of disagreement. But if we ever hope to have or be at a better place, then we have to be willing to have those discussions. And again, it has to be drenched in love. It has to come from a place of love. That doesn't mean that we don't get angry. That doesn't mean that I'm not angry at ISIS. I am very angry. And I want to see ISIS become a footnote in history because of all the innocent lives that they are taking. They're killing Muslims, Christians, homosexuals, straight people. They don't really care. And so what we have to do is, as a nation, first, the first job of our government is to protect its people. And so that needs to be corrected. That needs to be fixed. We need to take care of that. But as citizens, as neighbors, we must be willing to love and serve our neighbor and to help our neighbor, to mourn with our neighbor, to weep with those who weep. Because yes, Sunday was a terrible day, but there is hope for tomorrow. We have that message of good news. Please know that. So if you have that message of good news, then share it with your neighbor. Help them find hope. Everyone longs for that. Everyone. I was hearing stories today of survivors of the attack in Orlando, and they were saying things like, I was dragging myself through the club, and I saw a police officer. And I waved my phone, you know, to show that I'm alive. He saw that and he had hope. Hey, I'm going to be okay. There was another story of a guy that was able to get out of the club, and then he kind of waited around and he helped save the life of another person in the club. That gave that person hope. So what we have to do is, are we willing to stand for people, even people that are not like-minded, people that may vote differently than we do? I mean, that's difficult. Trust me. It's very difficult, but it is worthwhile. And what we can't do is immediately go into strawman arguments. Again, I'm pro-life as they come, I can assure you. But trying to frame this argument as, well, 3,000 babies were aborted and nobody's talking about that, that's not helpful. True, maybe, but not helpful. And so what we have to do is help push the life narrative. Try to bring people on board with us. And doing it that way, framing it that way, is not going to bring anyone to our side. Other ways you can do that is you can volunteer at Hope Resource Center. You can help us out. We'd love to see you. Because the work is literally saving lives. We saw 14 patients yesterday. We've seen abortion-minded patients. We've seen patients that once they saw an ultrasound, they changed their mind and they are going to parent the child. We saw patients yesterday that were on the fence, didn't really have a spiritual background, but told our staff, I'm amazed that these services are available at no cost. Why? Because we care deeply for people, all people, from all different walks of life, because they have value. And so we appreciate that. We appreciate you standing with us. We appreciate you standing for life. And we'll talk more about this next week when we come back. Thanks for listening.